Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball Insider Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. It all starts right here, right now, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning to you, baseball people. It is Inside the Clubhouse right here on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel. He is Bruce Levine. Game 3 of the World Series done now. The Dodgers up 2-1. There are Cubs and Sox issues to discuss, as there are every Saturday morning. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. Yeah, it's a great day to talk some fall ball. The World Series in full regatta right now. 2-1. The Dodgers lead the series. Are you watching out there? Are baseball fans watching? Matt, you and I are. How many other people can we add to that list? We will be talking World Series. We'll be talking Cubs and Sox. Great guest today, as usual, Pat Hughes, the great Cubs announcer. Joe Buck doing the World Series on Fox will be our special guest at 10:30 as well. And you, our great listener, is always welcome at 312-644-6767. That is also the text line where Matt will choose whether to put your information out there or not. And he is relatively picky.
I do like getting to read them, though. That is for sure. So dial it up textually and phonally as well. Yeah, we'll probably wake up Buck. He's in the middle of doing 8 games in 8 days, some NFL and some MLB. If this World Series goes 7, I think it's going to be 17 games in 18 days. He does this every October, and I love that. Go as long as you can. Go as hard as you can for as long as you can. Right, Bruce?
Right. The only busier person is his accountant. You know, that's his banker and his accountant. Those are the only two busier people than Joe Buck, who does a fabulous job, you know, being the voice of two sports on Fox, and just a tremendous individual as well. Fortunate to have been friends with Joe since the early 90s when I first met him with his dad. His dad introduced me to him, the great Jack Buck, back in St. Petersburg. And 1993, Joe was a young broadcaster just getting started, and what a great family, what a great family lineage that Buck people have produced over the years. So, yeah, it'll be fun to talk to Joe.
Bruce, a theme is emerging here in the World Series, and it's kind of familiar. It's two-strike approach. And for the Dodgers, a two-strike approach and a two-out approach. They now have scored 50 runs in this postseason with two outs. They've scored 36 runs in this postseason with two strikes. Last night, it's a 1-0 game in the second, and there are five outs, obviously, in the books. And then Charlie Morton hits Corey Seager, and with two outs, all of this. And Justin Turner doubles, Max Muncy singles. All of a sudden, you look up, it's 3-0, and that game would get to 5-0, 6-0. But these Dodgers getting it done with two outs, two strikes. I remember the Red Sox storyline was the same a couple years ago, and it's what the Cubs offense has struggled with, that two-strike approach, that lack of a B-hack, that lack of an ability to get things done with contact in the crunch and moments like that. And it brings us back to the broken Cubs offense when I look at a healthy Dodgers offense.
Well, the Dodgers can hit fastballs, and the Cubs have not been able to, which is surprising considering the quality of the players that the Chicago Cubs have, the offense that they've had, the things that they've done in their career, mostly beginning with this group in 2015, and the fact that they just are behind in fastballs. They are not swinging at strikes for fastballs. When they do swing, they are not making contact, and you are seeing a Dodger team that they live on the high fastball. They can hit it. They can square up. So there's a big difference there in the offenses. And the Cubs can only hope to the level that the Dodgers are at right now. It's fun to watch because they're doing it against some of the best pitchers in baseball. The Tampa Rays They have some of the best bullpen pitchers in the game, and they are getting it done.
Yes. Last night, Justin Turner ties Duke Snider for most postseason home runs in Dodgers history. Obviously, the postseason expanded these days. But there's Justin Turner, a creation, an evolution of the what the Dodgers system has been, and his own personal development and grabbing launch angle and building, rebuilding his swing and his approach around that. And yet he's able to get things done with two outs and two strikes. And I know you wanted to talk about this Cubs core and where things stand right now at the outset of the offseason as we read more about the Cubs again restructuring the hitting coach assemblage. Anthony Iaposi will stay. Termell Sledge will not. So it's not quite a firing of the hitting coach, but it is a rejiggering of the major league hitting coaching area yet again. So what is to do for Theo Epstein and for this Cubs brass as they think about this roster and how to retool it?
I'm still stuck on rejigger. I love that word. I will say this. Would you rather have 36-year-old Justin Turner at third base or 29-year-old Chris Bryant playing there next year? Hmm. So these are some of the choices that the Chicago Cubs will have in the offseason. So when you say, well, what do you mean? Well, if you're going to trade Chris Bryant, you are going to rejigger the money as far as how you spend your money. So allocating the same payroll that they have right now and spending less money will be the goal, partial goal of the Chicago Cubs, to also add players that are more productive. So for $20 million, would you be able to get more productivity out of Justin Turner at 37 or Chris Bryant at age 29? These are some of the questions that are being talked about and hopefully answered by the Chicago Cubs in this offseason here. It's a, you know, it's a vast array of different questions that they have to look at. They have to look at the free agency. They have to look at trades. There might be 100 guys or more that are non-tendered in November at the non-tender date. Do you wait for that list to come out before you start making your moves? Plenty of questions about how to rebuild a team or readjust a team on the fly. We talk about the Cubs like they're a failure. They won their division. I think we forget about that, even though it was a shortened season. They were the best team record-wise going into the playoffs, winning the National League Central.
So Justin Turner, who is a free agent, and you mentioned the non-tender date and some of the opportunities that will then present themselves for guys to grab on one-year deals. I think this market, this offseason, is going to be a lot of one-year deals, Bruce. It's going to be a lot of people kind of just sort of piecemealing it as organizations figure out what the financial realities are really going to be, and they'll be hesitant to give out long-term deals. And a lot of players, from the folks that we've talked to and read, a lot of players might be disappointed in the market that they find. So the methodology that you bring up is interesting. If the Cubs were to trade a Chris Bryant or a Javi Baez or a Kyle Schwarber and grab a bunch of young talent to restock the farm system and maybe impact the big leagues, they'd have to replace them with some of these guys on one-year deals to try and maximize another season in the theoretical winning window here. So it makes a lot of sense, you know, if you're gonna deal from your strength to restock the system. I think there could be a lot of guys out there to grab for a year, don't you?
For sure. And you know, people will say, well, if you're retooling, you're not bringing in a 37-year-old guy. But you might for 1 year, like you said. The premise might be there'll be an inordinate amount of one-year deals because of the fact that the revenue streams are so questionable as to how that's going to feed ownership to be able to pay players. And more importantly, the new CBA in December of 2021. So we're only 13 months away from, you know, the fist fight that will occur at that time, trying to find out whether or not you're going to have the same system, whether you're going to have a salary cap, whether you're going to have a bottom on that salary cap where teams have to spend a certain amount of money no matter what, like caps are. This is going to be a huge part of this offseason as well, saying, well, you know, how many $30 million times 5, 6, 7, 8 years do we want to hold on to when we don't know what the new CBA is going to say, what the new system is going to be for us? Do we want to hamstring ourselves going into a new collective bargaining agreement, not knowing what the rules are going to be and how people will be paid after 2021?
Well, I've brought this up and talked about it on different shows. If you've got a deal, one of, let's say, the five, Bryant, Baez, Rizzo, Schwarber, Contreras, I mean, do you suspect that one of those are going to go in this particular offseason just because now we've reached the urgency of the moment where, what, four of those guys are free agents at the end of next year? You've reached a point, right? It just Contreras is one that goes longer. The other four are free agents at the end of next season. So they've waited. What's that? Sorry?
He has an extra year. You're right.
Yeah, so he's the only Contreras. One with an extra year. The other four guys are the end of next season. So I think they've pushed this about as far as they can possibly go.
Let's subtract the guys we think won't go first. So in your mind, Matt, would Baez be the one guy that you're not going to trade, not only because of still being 27 years old, but the idea that he plays the essential position of shortstop, as well as just about anybody in baseball? Would that be a no, we can't trade Javi Baez for you?
No, not for me. Not for me. He's very much open in my conversations if I'm the boss over there, and clearly I'm not. But no, he's very much open in my conversations. I was extremely disappointed in this particular version of Javier Baez, and I know it's a 60-game year with no video and no crowd, but I found his offensive approach alarming this year in ways that harkened back to when he showed up. So no, he's not a cross off for me. For me, of the five, Rizzo is the one I cross off just because of his importance in terms of the clubhouse, his importance in terms of consistency, and he's one of the guys who approaches two strikes and two outs the way that you want guys to approach two strikes and two outs. So if there's one of the five that is not in conversation for me, it's Rizzo, but that's me.
Yeah, that's interesting because you picked out the oldest guy.
I know.
The guy that'll be 32 next August. And, certainly what you said is correct, all of those things. But you also add in the leadership of Anthony Rizzo. And that's something, again. But at this point in time, moving forward, he's going to make $16.5 million in 2021. What would your contract look like for an Anthony Rizzo moving forward into his age 33 year? You know, what would that contract look like from Matt Spiegel, the general manager of the Chicago Cubs?
Well, it because of the interesting moment here and because of Rizzo's age, he's not going to get some absurd payday that perhaps he had been dreaming of after he signed, you know, a couple of preemptive extensions and kind of locked himself in. You might be able to get away with 3 years. What did Abreu get? What did Jose Abreu get? 3 years at 14, 15 per?
Yeah, mm-hmm. 48 million in 3 years.
Yeah, three years at 48 million.
The thing you said
million.
About Rizzo was he locked himself into that long deal, which is actually 9 years.
Ah, yes, thank you.
Yeah, so it was 7 years with two option years, and he shorted himself probably about $125 to $150 million. But he also got paid an excellent amount of money. He's going to make somewhere around $80 million during that period of time. So there's no tag days for him. The question is, you know, whether he wants to try to make it up along the way. But I agree with you that, you know, there's no making it up at this point. There's just, maybe 2 to 3 year contract, 2 years with an option for Anthony Rizzo. Would that be sufficient for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would do that. I don't know that he would, but I don't know that he'll find better out there. This is just such an odd moment. If you offered Anthony Rizzo 2 years, $35 million with a club option for the third year to stay here where he has established the foundation and his place in the town and in the organization, I suspect he looks around and begrudgingly takes it. That's what I suspect.
Grudgingly, you know, he probably has some realistic idea now about where he's at in his career, how much money he's going to make. On top of, you know, the economic climate for paying players in the future, which, you know, appears to be, unless you're named Mookie Betts or Mike Trout, the scale of payment is going to be really different, I think. And I think shorter-term deals might be the answer for baseball players to get what they feel they deserve, and for teams to feel much better about the fact that they're not locking themselves into a Jake Arrieta contract that hasn't really worked out. I mean, that, you know, we hammer GMs and presidents of organizations for deals that they signed, free agents that they signed, trades that they made. What about how great a deal it was not signing Jake Arrieta and signing Yu Darvish at this point? I mean, how does that look to the Chicago Cubs baseball fan now? Is there enough concentration on saying that signing Arrieta would have been a big mistake considering what he's been able to do? And now with Darvish coming back into his own, what a good look that has. So from that perspective, you have to try to save yourself from making some of those big mistakes now, and shorter term deals seem to be the answer, Matt.
Well, let's back up to the question you had for me. Do you cross Baez off because of his, what position he plays and other factors? So is Baez a keeper for you?
I'm going to have to answer that by saying, well, I have to have a plan in place for who my next shortstop is going to be. I need to know I'm going to have the defensive player who is Javi Baez at age 27 available to me because I value defense so much at shortstop that I need to know I'm going to have somebody else in that position before I trade Javier Baez. Now, would I be against trading Javier Baez? Not necessarily if you get the right package back. I mean, you know, you're going to get good players back for him. It just depends on how you value him at this point, whether you feel he'll make those adjustments, getting back to the player that he was, or is he going to be the guy that strikes out and doesn't make as much hard contact that we saw in the 60 games in 2020. That's the hard question to answer, is how much do you value what you saw in 2020, Matt, as far as predicting and projecting your players and your team in the future?
Well, it's interesting. One answer to something you brought up is, how about all Pac-12 shortstop Nico Hoerner while you wait for Ed Howard to develop and arrive? That's one thought on the shortstop.
I don't know if Horner's an everyday player.
Yeah, he sure didn't show that offensively this year. You're absolutely correct. But the other thing that I keep coming back to about Baez and really the overall market is the fact that next year most clubs expect to have limited capacity, and if you're the Cubs, that probably means just your season ticket holders. So your day of game marketability, that is a big reason why you love Baez. It doesn't matter as much. And I keep coming back to that issue, and we'll talk about it later in regards to Trevor Bauer and what the market is. But the fact that selling the team to a fan base that you want to come buy tickets and beer, I don't think is really much of an issue for next season. I wonder how that will affect some things in front offices around the game.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect. We want your participation as well. As always, 312-644-6767. That's our phone and text line. We'll be talking to Pat Hughes at the bottom of the hour, Joe Buck at 10:30, and hopefully you during our show as well as we go up to 11 o'clock before we welcome Rosie and Mark Grody.
He is Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. It's Inside the Clubhouse. As Bruce said, 312-644-6767. Looking forward to a conversation with Pat Hughes, Joe Buck later on, and you guys every step of the way right here on 670 The Score.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The Cubs have done it. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
Time of year, we are inundated, Bruce Levine, with anniversaries of big, big moments. The other night was the anniversary of the Cubs beating the Dodgers and winning the National League pennant. I think 2 days ago was the anniversary of the Konerko Grand Slam, mm-hmm. Game 2 of the 2005 World Series for the White Sox. Every day you look up here in late October is often the anniversary of something very cool that we wish was just a little bit more current for Chicago baseball.
Yeah, you can bet on that. The White Sox are certainly moving toward that again with the fine team they're building. And, you know, as much as Cub fans are disappointed, the bar has been raised so very high by the Epstein-Hoyer baseball group over the last 9 years, now going into their ninth year with playoffs being the number one thing, going to the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years, and fans, more importantly, Matt, not being satisfied with just making the playoffs any longer.
Such is the cost of doing business when you elevate the expectations. You know, I remember watching it happen with Red Sox fans in the first decade of this century, and we have watched it happen with Cub fans right here. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel. He's Bruce Levine. Our next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
And that voice you heard on that great call of the Cubs winning a World Series for the first time in 108 years, our good friend and a voice of the Chicago Cubs, Pat Hughes, joins us on this Saturday morning on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Pat. How are you today?
Bruce and Matt, I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We've been talking a little bit about the World Series and whether or not people are watching it very much. Has it resonated with the baseball fan that this 60-game season was something to glorify beyond just getting those games in and having the entertainment value there for the baseball fan? And maybe that's where we start with you, Pat. Do you think the off season, the postseason here is resonating with baseball fans?
Well, apparently, Bruce, not the way it normally does. I was reading about the ratings, I guess, for the first couple of games of the World Series. They were some of the lowest rated watched games in a couple of decades. But I think part of that has to do with the pandemic and the fact that it was a shorter season. I personally am thankful we had any baseball at all, because when the season began in late July, the Marlins and Cardinals in particular had numerous coronavirus cases pop up, and there was a feeling there that if this gets any worse, the whole season's going to be called off. So thankfully that did not happen, and I am very thankful that the teams were able to play a truncated 60-game season. Now, one thing I think about the World Series that perhaps is watering down the enthusiasm of baseball fans would be the fact that Globe Field is the home of the Texas Rangers. It looks like a beautiful park, brand new. It cost over $1 billion to construct. But it's not the home of the two participants, Tampa Bay and the Dodgers. I think that possibly is turning off a lot of baseball fans. I've always thought that part of the charm of the World Series is the fact that teams get to play in their home park in front of their home fans. And I know, for example, in the Cubs' case, there were fans that literally waited an entire lifetime to be able to see some World Series games in 2016.
Absolutely, Pat. And just the fact that, oh, so that ballpark is what we get to showcase. That particular niche of baseball is what we get to showcase, for better or for worse. Hell, I'd rather see Tropicana Field last night and tonight. Just then we would talk about the oddness that is the Tampa Rays and how they have emerged from having to play there. And all that being said, you're right. I couldn't help but think, as we watched Freddie Freeman battling in the NLCS, of the first moments of this season as they tried to get it done and Freddie Freeman tested positive for the virus. You guys remember that? That was one of the first scares that we had. It happened when you and I were on the air, Bruce. It was one of the first scares that we had, but baseball found a way to continue. I think there's a lot of value. As much as it may not be, obviously, a true measure of a full season of excellence, I think there's a lot of value for the consistency and the history of the game and getting it done and not doing a full skip of this year, which I know was on the table, Pat.
You know, you mentioned Freddie Freeman, Matt, and he not only had the virus, he had a bad case of it. I'm not sure how many different strains of the coronavirus there are, but he had a real nasty bout to the point where he thought he was going to die. So thankfully, he recovered, and not only recovered, but he had one of the best seasons of any big league ball player this year. It's just such a different year. Looking forward, Bruce and Matt, so much uncertainty still existing in baseball and in society in general, I might add. But I think the vaccine determines so much of what happens across the board in America in the next, say, year or 2 years. When will the vaccine be ready? How effective will it be? When will this virus be completely under control? Will fans in baseball be allowed back in ballparks? Will the revenues of baseball be back to normal levels where they were before the pandemic hit? So it's so difficult to even imagine what's going to happen. And a very sobering thing I just read in the paper, and I saw it actually last night on CNN as well, over 80,000 new cases came up just yesterday, and that's a one-day high. So it would appear that we still have a lot of work to do to get this thing under control.
That's the voice of Pat Hughes. You know it so well. He's been doing Chicago Cub games for going into how many years now? 26, Pat?
Yeah, amazing. Wow. I was laughing the other day. You guys, somebody said, how long you been there? I said, well, 25 years with the Cubs, and it's certainly a great place to be, and I've had so much fun with my partners and with the fans and with the teams. But I was laughing. I said, when I first got here, they called me the voice of the Cubs. Now, after 25 years, they call me the voice of the Cubs. It sounds like I have not had a job promotion in a quarter of a century.
What's to be promoted to?
No, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like this a dead end gig to me. But
yeah, you already have the best job in the world, right? So I don't know where you go after that. Pat, the theme that Matt and I are talking about a little bit today is the separation anxiety from the knowledge that we have from Theo Epstein that one or more of the core four or five players on the Chicago Cubs are likely to be moved this offseason. We know that Rizzo and Schwarber and Baez and Bryant all are approaching their walk year in 2021, can be free agents exactly a year from the end of the World Series next season. How do you look at that, knowing that people just, in general, don't want to let go of any of this group because of the specialness of what they brought to Chicago in 2016 and the consistent good play of the Chicago Cubs over the last 6 years?
And Bruce, you put that very well with the question. And my feeling is I've understood for a long time now that baseball is both entertainment And it's a business, and it's a very difficult business in many ways. And I think in the case of ball players who are excellent players, you know that they get to become a free agent after 6 full years of service time. And whether or not they stay with their team is up to management. And it's a business decision, many times not a baseball one. And I think in the case of the Cubs or any team that has won a World Series championship, those players on the World Series champion team, they become special to fans, much more special than just a player on a losing team. Those players become part of the fans' hearts, and they will remain in the hearts of the fans. Without sounding too corny, I hope, I think those players stay in your heart for the rest of your life. And for those players to leave, I think it really is a traumatic thing for a fan to experience. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is. It definitely is, especially when those players were part of delivering on something that generations have waited for. And it's also, it's a watching them grow. It's a watching them mature and evolve, and in some cases not evolve the way that you had. It's a very deep emotional connection, that is for sure. And that's the awkwardness of this twofold sport, like you mentioned, Pat, that it is love, it is connection, and it is all the sentiment, and it is also a business. So it can be cruel in that way. That's for sure. I wanted to ask you about Javier Baez, about one of those guys. I put a lot of stock in the fact that is a man who is driven by performance and by connection with the live energy of a crowd. And maybe it's because, you know, me as a singer, I know I function off that, but not everybody does. Not every ball player does. But as you've watched Javi through the years, doesn't it make sense that he would miss and did miss the energy connection with a live crowd the way that he did this year?
I think that's a great point, Matt. Absolutely. And I think others as well. But I think in particular, a guy like Baez, who, by the way, he is one of the most enjoyable players that I have ever had the pleasure to watch on a daily basis. And I think that's one of the coolest things about being a big league baseball announcer, is you get to do every game and you get to watch a guy play many times for his entire career. And I grew up in the Bay Area, and there was a guy named Russ Hodges, who was the great Giants announcer, and Lon Simmons. But Russ saw virtually the entire career of Willie Mays. And Mays was so much fun to watch, not just from a statistical standpoint, but from an artistic and dramatic and playing with a flair and a love of the game. And in many ways, Javier Baez kind of reminds me of Willie Mays in that regard. So I personally, if Baez does leave, and eventually he will, every player does, they either retire or they get traded or they become a free agent, I will miss him whenever he does leave. And the same would apply to Chris Bryant. I've seen Chris do some amazing things. The game in Cincinnati that night back in June of 2016, when in a 5-at-bat game, Bryant had 3 homers and 2 doubles. Nobody had ever done that in a major league game before. Anthony Rizzo is a tremendous ball player to watch. Just the fact that he loves the game, he's such a leader on the team, and I'll never forget watching him play on a badly sprained ankle 2 years ago when he was trying to help lead the Cubs into the playoffs. Kyle Schwarber, there's another guy who loves the game, loves the fans. He's always kind of waving to the fans out in left field. He does that little dance to the Aerosmith song right before the ball game begins. These are all special, charismatic ball players, and it does hurt. It hurts me to think about them leaving, but again, this is a business.
Speaking of businesses, baseballvoices.com is a business that you have, Pat. Explain a little bit of some of the great CDs you have to offer, as well as some of those iconic scorecards that you have that you sign and send out as well. I know with the holidays coming up relatively soon, pretty close now, you might have a couple special deals out there.
Well, Bruce, we do, and you're so kind to let me talk about Baseball Voices on your program. But the website is baseballvoices.com. We have produced 17 CDs, and I perform as the producer, the writer, and the narrator. And Harry Carey is included, Ron Santo. We put together a special CD on the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series back in 2016. The latest one we have, and it actually came out last year, is Bob Costas, but it came out too late for any holiday marketing plan last year. But the Bob Costas CD is a special one. It's a two-CD set, and has there ever been a better broadcaster, not just a sports announcer, but a better broadcaster in America than Bob Costas when you consider
Matt Spiegel.
His play-by-play, Matt Spiegel, you said? Well, okay, you're right. I stand corrected.
That one game I did in March, Pat, I think that's what Bruce is referring to.
No, you're right, Pat. Please continue on.
But I was just going to say, when you think about Costas, his play-by-play, his studio hosting, his interviewing ability, his contributions to documentaries, his eulogies, and then the way he speaks extemporaneously with no script, in perfect sentences, perfect paragraphs, never repeating himself. He always has the right word. He never stumbles. He's just an amazingly talented man. But he's the latest in the Baseball Voices series, and it's called Bob Costas, All-Star at Every Position. And these are all available at baseballvoices.com. Now, Bruce, the special thing we have going on right now is a two-for-one offer. You buy one, you get one free. And that's across the board on CDs, on all the scorecards. We have my scorecard from Game 7 of the World Series, Game 6 of the NLCS of 2016, the Kerry Wood 20-strikeout game, which I still think is by far the best pitched game I have ever seen in over 6,000 Major League broadcasts. So that scorecard is available. Again, buy one, get one free. They're affordable. I've always tried to keep them as affordable as possible. And also that we have some bobbleheads out. But the whole deal is buy one, get one free.
It's pretty cool.
I have a number of those. Yeah, you're right, Matt. And again, that, with the holidays coming up, baseballvoices.com is the place to go to get this great deal from Pat. And Pat, don't be shy about that bobblehead. It's a very, very good depiction of you. It's perfect, and goes nicely on in the rec rooms for all the guys and women out there as well.
Well, the humbling thing to me, Bruce and Matt, is that the hair on the bobblehead is better than the hair I have on my own head. So that's but it's a fun thing, and we try to have fun on all this stuff. But baseballvoices.com, and if you go to the website and don't see the two-for-one offer, just use the customer service line number there, and we'll take care of that. It's 847-867-3682, and we'll make sure somebody calls you right back, okay?
Pat, thanks so much for joining us, as always. It's going to be an interesting offseason for all the teams, especially the Chicago Cubs. I know you'll be watching, and I know we will be talking to you soon. Stay happy, stay healthy, and we will talk soon.
The same to you, Bruce and Matt. Thanks, guys, and happy holidays early. I hope I'm on again before the holidays, but if not, I hope everyone has the best possible holiday season, everything considered, this year.
Thanks so much, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Great to hear.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Love it. Thank you. That's Pat Hughes right there on 670 The Score. People love to hear his voice, and understandably so. Hey, Bruce Levine, Joe Buck will join us next hour. You reported, though, that Tony La Russa's interview with the White Sox took place. There were other candidates as well. I want to get the latest from you on that situation. And I told you I need to run this Trevor Bauer idea by you at some point as well. So we've got time to do all that, don't you think?
Sounds good.
All right. It's 670 The Score. Inside the Clubhouse continues. Keep it right here. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Bruce, you reported earlier in the week Tony La Russa had his interview with the White Sox. Yes? What can you tell the fans about the state of that news?
I'm going to tell them everything they need to know about Tony La Russa interviewing with the White Sox, with possibilities of other people we know have already interviewed, and who the other candidates might be after the break.
Oh, look at that. It's the tease of epic proportions. Well done, sir.
And it's a very brief break, so we're not having people hold that long, but there's plenty to talk about there. White Sox fans' reaction, your reaction, Matt. I'm also interested in as well, and fans' reactions at 312-644-6767. Text us at that number as well.
So hop on in. We'll talk about that and Trevor Bauer potentially to the White Sox and some impressions from the game last night, the World Series Game 3, and MLB broadcaster from Fox, Joe Buck, is going to join us at 10:30 as well. So keep it right here on 670 The Score. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel on Inside the Clubhouse.